Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Community Geek Podcast. This is Greg Russo, Community Manager for CommunityGeek.com. Joining me is my partner in crime, Michael Smith.
Hi, Greg.
Now, most of you know me and Mike from posting in the forums. This is Mike's first time on the show. Unfortunately, Richard can't be with us this week. He is out in Lithuania giving a speech or seminar or possibly both at a community event over there. So hopefully the next time we get him back on the show, he'll be able to tell us a bit about how that trip was. And maybe he can tell us some things that he learned, some people he met, and how his event went. So we've had a bunch of things happen to the Community Geek site. I'm going to take you through some quick site news. We had a massive overhaul of the homepage if you're not logged in. We had a massive overhaul of the sign-up process. We had a massive overhaul of the text editor. If any of you are planning on throwing in a post, you'll now notice that the text editor looks much nicer and is much more compact, easy to use, and actually spell checks for you. As silly as it sounds, it's kind of a big deal to get done. So,
well, except for me that I try writing in UK English, and then it tells me that I'm supposed to be writing in American English. And
well, as I said, it corrects you. Yeah. We've Touché. Fixed a couple bugs. We're fixing some email bugs right now. We fixed the bug on the homepage where everything would show up as new, even if it wasn't. We fixed the ability for people to embed Vimeo and YouTube in their posts. So if you guys want to make posts with videos in it, or you want to add a resource that's a video, it'll be, now be a lot easier for you to do that. You can have signatures in the forums now. And we've also done a whole bunch of stuff on the back end that I won't bore you with, but needless to say, our metrics now work. And we get all kinds of cool notifications when people do things like apply to the site, which is nice. So there's more to come, much more to come, but we wanted to let you guys know a few things that, you know, your support is helping to get done in this community. Community Geek is going places, believe me.
I think what you forgot to mention, Greg, is the Meet the Team page.
Yes.
Anyone listening to this now can see our mugs and picture us talking.
We've got exactly what we look like. And we've got a podcast page as well, with a new podcast logo designed by yours truly. I think it looks brilliant.
Looks like you as well.
Oh, you suck. No, I think it looks pretty nice.
It looks really good.
Yeah. And the players are all working, and the podcast is on the homepage, which is cool. So, let's get into our first story. We want to talk a little bit about something which I really hate the title for it, but it's called the mullet strategy. I've never heard it referred to in that way by anybody ever. But apparently, Ben Martin of Online Community Results says that that's what it's called. I don't know. I think it's just called good use of social media. But anyway, the mullet strategy is using your social media presence, Twitter, Facebook, that sort of thing, to bring people into your online community that's maybe on a private platform. So either tweeting your content out or get members talking about it, and then using that as a springboard for them to engage deeper with your community. I did this for Arecibo Society, and it was super successful. We had a Facebook page, and that's where most of our community activity happened, but we didn't have much of a Twitter presence till I was brought on. So I started getting that going, getting it retweeted, and we got engagements from some big names and got attention through that. We participated in a couple cool hashtag chats for some live events, particularly like science events that were going on by Neil deGrasse Tyson and things like that. And it put eyes on the community. It got us interest. It got us name recognition. It got us a few more signups. But most of the actual community activity, such as it was, did not occur on Twitter. We had no community engagement on Twitter. There was like a little bit of back and forth between our official account and people, but it wasn't really what you would call community. All that community stuff was going on the Facebook. But everything we did on the Twitter side of things pointed people back to the community.
using it as a sort of gateway.
Exactly. It's a way for them to... It's like... I thought of it as an invitation. Every time you're putting out content, it's an invitation for someone that's interested in that content that finds you to join your community and engage deeper, find more of what they want, which your community should be providing.
And so do you, if you're going to be pursuing that strategy, do you need to have more followers or users on your Facebook and Twitter feeds to get them into the community? You would need, it seems to me, a big following on those networks to get people in.
Well, and everything builds, right? You don't start off with 10 million people on Facebook unless you're already an established name. Like, if you're a huge celebrity and you decide you want to make a Facebook page all of a sudden, or like Ashton Kutcher when he got into Twitter, all of a sudden, boom, he's got like zillions of followers. That's not going to be the case for any of us, probably most of the people listening to this show.
Well, I've just hit 20, actually.
Congratulations.
After a month, yeah, which is pretty good. Yeah.
I was informed today that there is a leaderboard for community managers on Twitter, and I am 43.
43?
Yeah, I'm tied with many people, including Feverbee's official account, but I'm on the list, so that feels good.
Oh, do you know what? I've just gone down to 19, actually.
Oh.
Someone's left the cult.
That was that quip about British English.
It wasn't you, was it?
No. I would never.
No.
I would never advocate that everyone stop following Michael Smith on Twitter. That would be absolutely terrible of me to do.
I haven't done a tweet for 9 days. Maybe that's why.
Oh, yeah, you gotta tweet like every week or so.
Yeah, or every day, I suppose, really.
Well.
Never mind.
You will as the habit gets deeply ingrained into your body.
Well, I'm just too busy, you see, Greg, on Community Geek.
Mm.
But I don't think the mullet strategy is going to work through my Twitter and Facebook feeds, to be honest with you.
No, but I'm trying to make it work for mine. I plan on using Twitter to help promote Community Geek, and I've done it a little bit with some people. I want to shout out to Brian Glick. And, you make light friendships. We would call them weak ties. You make weak ties, but every weak tie is an opportunity to be converted to a strong one. Every time you link out content, it's an opportunity for them to follow that content, and then they go, oh, that was nice. Who's putting this out? Where is this located? I want more of this thing. How do I get it? Is that the apply now button that's over here? Oh, it is. Okay, cool. I'm going to do that. And every time that happens, that's one more person in your community. That's one potential person that can help spread your community.
I wonder if there's any instances where you shouldn't be pursuing the mullet strategy. It seems like a no-brainer to me.
I could think of a few instances where maybe it wouldn't be terribly appropriate.
Yeah?
Maybe certain health communities probably wouldn't do well with it. Communities for people that have either criminal or mental issues. There's some reason why they would want to be in a community that has a bit more privacy.
Yeah.
That could probably be an issue, because the whole point of the sharing on the social media is you're constantly putting it out there, and not just in general terms. Like, you want it to be compelling enough that people will actually go in and see it. So you want to be careful that you're not, like, if people are making posts that's really personal and they're sharing their private stories to try to either get support or offer support from other people facing the same issues. That's not really the kind of thing you want to put out there. Maybe you could put other kinds of content from your site out there, like articles on maybe how people are coping with such issues. Mm. But it probably wouldn't be a good idea to share their personal posts. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
And I'm sure there are a few other instances I'm not really thinking of off the top of my head, but that one jumps out at me. I just think it's an important thing for people to keep in mind in the toolbox.
That's right. I'm just reading the piece, actually. I think we should link up to that on Community Geek so people can have a read of that, the mullet strategy.
Yeah, sure.
That's quite good.
So this is sort of related to the mullet strategy, our second story. Discussion on Community Geek forums about third-party signups, which is you know, you have your private platform or you have your private community, but you can join it through your Facebook, Google, or Twitter credentials or some other service like that. You see, Discus has this. It's the one that pops out. DigReader also has this. You can sign in with your Google account and it just kind of goes. And the discussion is whether or not it promotes people signing up because it's easier. And if so, is it worth not having access/control to their information? So in other words, it's sort of in Google's hands, right? If Google's got a bug or if Google's sites go down or if Twitter's out of capacity and they're not working, that'll impact your sign-up process. So is that trade-off worth it?
So here's the thing with that, Greg, that for me was a problem. I don't know whether I did this on Spotify or whether it just automatically connected my Facebook or whether I had to create an account via Facebook. It's so long ago, I can't remember now. But the other night when my mum shares my Spotify account and she was listening to Michael Jackson and Britney Spears and all sorts of things, and it just came up on my Facebook feed, and then my friends were saying to me, "You've been listening to Britney Spears," and I was like, "I have not been listening to Britney Spears. I'm telling you right now, I'm not at all." But they said, "Well, it's right there on your Facebook feed," and I had to come up with this excuse that my mum was listening to it, and they just said that's a lie. They wouldn't believe me. So for me, it depends what they're going to do with your information and how intrusive it is and how intrusive the connection is there, because I didn't really want that information put in on my Facebook, and I need to work out how to de-link those two accounts, if you will.
Yeah, that's a pretty big concern for me and a lot of people as well. And there's like ways that you can change, say, in Facebook what apps post to what. But then it goes into the question of defaults, opting in versus opting out, that kind of thing. And sometimes those default permissions are not what you want them to be, and it may not be terribly obvious to the user how to change them. And then once they have a negative experience, as you just did, then you know, that's that's a potential that they'll leave your community or stop using your service.
Yeah, I mean, mine's quite a trivial problem that no one was harmed, but except my ego. But now I'm just having to click around trying to de-link it, and I've absolutely no idea how. They don't make it terribly easy.
Yeah, so that's definitely a big risk. Some of that is in the platform's hands, the community's hands. You know, you are able to say what gets posted. You know, you can make those defaults yourself. So if you don't want that to be an issue for your users, but you do want to use third-party sign-up, just have your platform's interaction with that third party be as unobtrusive as possible. I would advocate letting your members decide what gets shared. Have everything be opt-in as opposed to opt-out, because as much as you want to get your, you know, as much as you would love to leverage the fact that they've got a social media account tied to your community already, try to encourage your members to do that on their own because they want to share things. If you force it on them, if you make it a default and everything gets thrown up there, they're going to be much less likely to feel positive about that because you're sort of taking it out of their hands.
And do we know anything about the level of engagement, whether it decreases when people sign up via a third-party platform? Do we get people, lazy people coming and joining communities and then not coming back because they can't be bothered to put the effort in to do a login? So does that mean, are they going to put a full effort into your community if they can't even be bothered to sign up properly and modify their signature and their avatar and really get involved?
Well, as I last looked at that thread, that was one of the main discussions that was still ongoing. I got the sense from how people were talking that there hasn't been a lot of actual research into whether this helps or hurts the community building process. And I would encourage anyone that's listening to this show, if they do happen to know of a study, or in lieu of a study, if they have any firsthand experience with this, to please post up on that thread and help inform the discussion, because right now it's a lot of guessing. For instance, I think It'd probably be easier for people to sign up. There'd be more growth. Sometimes tying things to a social media account can help increase transparency and trust building, because people have Facebook pages, and when they sign up, that's their real name. You know what I mean? Mm. And it's spoofable, but it's much more difficult, and for the casual user, probably not going to be a thing. So that could be a thing, but you do make a good point that because it's so easy and trivial to sign up, you know, how much are these people really going to engage? I know, for instance, DigReader, this is a personal anecdote, but DigReader, I used my Google account for it so it would import my RSS feeds.
Mm.
But I don't actually post anything. I don't comment on anything. I don't, like, I'm a complete ghost on that community.
Mm. I've just seen a study, actually, on this that says as many as 80% of people who encounter social login use it to log in. So that's 4 out of 5.
So the demand is clearly there. And why not, right? Because at this point, how burnt out are people for signing up for things on the internet? Like, every website needs a new name, new password, new this, new that. There's a lot of push towards single sign-on. And like decreasing the amount of times you need to sign into places, decreasing the number of accounts you need to keep track of, decrease the number of places where you have to keep re-entering your personal information. There are, of course, security risks to that, but I think at this point, because of how often these sites play a role in our daily lives, like how many times you go to communities, how many times you go to social media, how many times you go to e-commerce sites, that it's become a bit more of an annoyance than a security benefit to have, like, information all over the place now. People just want to be able to have a few identities that they can manage and just have those identities work wherever they want them to work, and then they can just go.
And as we use more and more services online, I think this is just going to become a bigger and bigger problem that somebody's going to have to solve.
Yeah, and you can't solve it by just having, you know, oh, it's just you, and then there's no other way for you to differentiate yourself, because you also see a lot of people, like that 20%, that's a lot of people that don't want to use the third-party sign-on. There's a lot of people that want to have the ability to use anonymity, pseudonymity, or just make multiple personalities for themselves. You see this on YouTube all the time with people that make multiple channels, and they'll sort of diversify their community a little bit by having one channel that's like their official character, and then another channel that's a behind-the-scenes kind of thing, and then maybe another one where they talk in a personal video blog type style, and then maybe it's not a sketch comedy show or not their usual content.
Mm.
That's so important to be able to do too.
Have you ever used any websites or apps which only allow you to log in via social?
That only allow?
Yeah, so you can't create an account. You have to go via social login.
I'm positive that I have. The name escapes me, though.
Yeah, because I think we've used an app here. I can't remember what it's called either. We should probably find out and mention that again next time. I don't know why they would do that. Maybe the app, for a new app, they wouldn't have to create the account system, manage the account system. It could all be run via Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, it would drop costs massively.
Yeah.
And maybe it would have something to do with verifying the people that
that's
in,
right.
in
I'm
the
just
community.
Thinking about dating websites, it would be quite useful, actually,
yes,
because it's some sort of accountability there.
In fact, I think you see a lot of sites, I don't know if this is big over the UK, but there's a site called OkCupid here, and I know from friends that have used it, they have an option where you can tie, I think it's Facebook, I don't know if it's Twitter, but you can tie like one of your social accounts to your profile to get it like, quote, verified, end quote. And it's
friends of yours have used it, so
yes,
it's not
of course. But it's supposed to add like a check mark or some kind of indication that you're like more of a real person than I guess
that's
other
right.
people that haven't done it.
Mm.
I
of
believe
course you could,
Tinder
you could
as well requires a Facebook account. I don't know
Tinder.
That you can use it without.
Have that in the UK, actually. My friend also really likes to use that app.
Your friend, yes.
I'm not allowed it.
Oh, of course, of course.
No, my other half doesn't allow that.
It's quite a popular app here in the States, and I'm almost positive that you can't sign up unless you have Facebook specifically.
And everybody has Facebook, let's face it.
Nowadays. Oh, I remember back in the days when it was just college students.
Yeah, the Facebook.
Yep, and then they ruined it. Not kidding.
Made it accessible for all. Why?
All of a sudden your aunt's on there and it's just talking.
Or maybe your mum and dad.
Thankfully, no.
No, mine aren't either, but my girlfriend's, both of her parents are on Facebook.
Actually. Oh, dear.
So I have to watch what I say, even though they're not my parents.
All right. So speaking of, this is great. We have lots of segues here. Speaking of communities taking steps toward expansion and then having the quality go down, there's a article posted called "Do Communities Always Get Worse When They Grow?" And this is another discussion that's happening in the Community Geek forums and is, I'm actually getting quite a lot of posts. Basically, the idea is law of averages. You have more people in your community, you're going to have more toxic elements. And also, based on lots of research on communities, as communities grow, you know, the number of people are in there, the less likely those people are to make strong connections to every one of the other people in the community. That's just how we work. There's an upper limit to the number of strong ties that we can make. I believe it's 150-ish, according to science. And you can get more ties than that, but you decrease the quality. And at what threshold, you know, does it go down to where you're not maintaining that sense of community with them anymore?
So by worse, we're really defining that as the quality of the posts and the sense of community amongst members.
Yeah.
Rather than, I suppose, the amount of posts and the regularity of posts, because presumably the more members you get, the more diverse the content in your community. So.
Well, sure, and there'd be a greater volume and all that stuff, but, you know, quantity is not always quality. In fact, they're frequently at odds with one another.
So here's the thing. Have you ever seen a community where there's an upper limit for the number of people that are allowed in? So there's a cap. You know, let's say for talking sake, 100,000 people join Community Geek. Please, that'd be fantastic.
Fingers crossed, guys.
and then we say, that's it, the doors are shut. We've got all the people we want and we don't care who comes along because we've determined that that is the peak number of people we would like. I've not come across that, have you?
I've come across that not in an online community in the sense that you, I, or most of the people that are on Community Geek would think about it, but in a gaming community, I've actually encountered this. There was I forget their name, but it was a group in EVE Online. They had a very strict limit. I think it was like 50. They wouldn't grow their group above 50. And like if they ever wanted to bring someone new in, that person had to wait until, you know, one of the spots opened up, basically. And I know there are a couple alliances in EVE that are focused on training new players where they have limited class sizes because they need to be able to focus on, you know, people and make sure they get the proper guidance and mentorship. And if you want to think about any kind of online training course as a sort of community, a mini community, then I think you'll find that that practice probably implemented a lot more than in the kind of communities like Community Geek or communities like Reddit. Obviously, Reddit has no upper cap. That thing is huge.
But what if somebody absolutely fantastic comes along and you say, we're full and we've got to turn you away? That's, maybe you kick out the newest member or, you know, last in, first out sort of thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a tough one. I don't... that's one of those things where I don't see any real model in terms of a business model where you could have it be a hard cap of 150 people. I mean, you'd need to charge.
And you would need to get, you would need to make sure those people were completely engaged rather than just hogging the spots and not doing anything with it just for the, having it for the prestige. So I think there's actually, that goes on with, I'll diverse a little bit, but that goes on with football. Season tickets actually at some of the biggest football clubs in the UK. So someone has a Manchester United season ticket and then they go every season. And then when they die, they actually pass it down to the children. And so you could do that with the community as well. You could say, you can pass it on to somebody after. It's kind of like allotments as well. That works like that, just to really, really digress.
That would be interesting. I mean, if there's anyone listening that's seen a, like a community that actually is tied to a business of some kind that has had this kind of, like, I don't know how to call it, like a member cap. Please post, because I would find that fascinating. I don't see how it could possibly work unless that 150 people that you have brought in is like super rich. Maybe there is a super rich community of 150 people online. That's
a billionaires community.
Yeah.
And you have to prove you're a billionaire to get in.
You have to drop a million right there. That's the only way to get in.
You have to submit £1 million and then you have to tell them the amount that shows up on your bank statement, and then you have to send it back, kind of like PayPal, but right, in a really obscene way.
But instead of like 10 cents, it's like $10,000. Exactly.
For me, it was 9p and 11p, but if anyone actually wants to join my billionaires community, they can send me £1 million and £9 million, and then that'll be fine. No, I'll let them in then, but I won't send it back.
So those two discussions are ongoing on the Community Geek forums. They're going to be linked in the show notes of this show. Like I said, hop in there, get engaged in that. If you have any firsthand experience or if you know of any good articles, research, videos, please, by all means, share it with the rest of us, because these are two of the more interesting discussions we've had recently. And I want more information on this stuff. Like, it's super interesting and really important for practice, like very big practical implications.
What I'm really worried about now, Greg, is that when Community Geek starts getting bigger, that it's gonna get worse somehow. Are we saying that the people in there who are already in there, when a community gets bigger, that the people at the start, they're suddenly, their behavior changes, they go from being good members when it was small to becoming bad members when it gets big for some reason? Or is it just that the numbers swell so much you just get a concentration of bad people by default?
Well, I think it's just, you're just gonna have it. I mean, if you bring in 100 people, you might have one or two bad actors that you have to deal with. If you bring in 10,000 people, you know, you might have like 100 or so trolls, and that's like exponentially more difficult to deal with. I mean, you can stay on top of it with good community management and having a good community culture. But I think it's just a natural law of the internet that the more popular, more well-known, larger your community is, the more likelihood you're going to have people that are either just bad community members, like legitimately, and then you're going to have people that are coming in there specifically to see if they control the community. And that's just the way it is.
I suppose it depends on the speed of the growth. Is if there's a sudden surge,
yeah, that's good.
The members in there can't see off the bad guys and the trolls. If there's just too many of them arrive at once, then that would be,
or even beyond that, if you flash, and this happens in gaming all the time. I'm glad you brought up this point. I'm a big gamer, as most of the people on the forums know by now. And this is like one of the most surefire ways to kill your gaming community, is to bring in too many people too quickly. And I would imagine it goes for most communities generally. And I do believe Richard would agree with me, based on some things that he said in passing. But if you bring in, let's say your community is 100 people, and then all of a sudden you open it up wide and you get like a gigantic influx of like 5,000 people all of a sudden, like within a week. there's no real way for those 5,000 people to possibly make the personal connections with the original group. Like, not in any appreciable, scalable way. There's just too many of them for your original group to handle. There's no... At that point, they are defining the culture for your community rather than your community culture helping inform them how to behave. Because there's all these new people around that don't know what they're doing, necessarily. They aren't familiar with the community's culture. They're not familiar with how to behave, how to post, what content is acceptable and what isn't. And you start to lose that cohesive identity. And meanwhile, these new people that are coming in aren't making the strong ties with the established people. There's no mentorship. There's no connection. There's no looking at people as like, oh, that guy's like the top poster. I want to know more about him. I want to be like that guy. There's no status jockeying. It's just all these new people coming in here, and they will simultaneously dilute the identity of the community, be disruptive forces, and they're also more likely to leave because they're not making these tight connections. And the consequence of that sometimes can be you've got all these guys coming in, they disrupt the established order, and then that momentum saps away as those people eventually start to leave, and then you're just left with a community with no identity and sagging numbers, and it just creates this sort of downward cycle.
It goes against your intuition, really, because you think, great, we've got 5,000 new people in a week. That's fantastic. Everyone's going to be pleased by that. And then suddenly you find it just decays away everything you've worked so hard to build. And so it's about creating that slow momentum and introducing people carefully rather than looking at just the numbers, because the numbers aren't everything.
Yep. No matter how many people you want to bring in, it's not wrong to want to grow. It's not wrong to want to grow fast. But you need to grow no faster than your community and your organization can handle the growth.
Exactly.
If you're bringing in more people than you can acculturate, either yourselves or by tapping the more like community evangelists within your community, guys that are really pumped about bringing in new people, pumped about spreading the word of the community, bringing those people in, talking to the new guys, helping them out. You can tap those people in your community and expand your capacity to handle growth beyond what your actual community management team is. But if between yourselves and your really active, engaged community members that are interested in helping new people come in and sort of get their bearings, if you can't handle it beyond that, then you're going to run into some problems potentially. And it just creates more work for you down the line and could be a potential reason for a spiral in your community's momentum.
So we could summarize and say that there's no real concrete evidence that communities always get worse as they grow, but it just depends how you manage that growth. And if you do it properly, then there's really no reason for it to decline.
Yeah, I would say it's the speed of growth, probably. Because, I mean, if you do bring in, and eventually your community goes to 1 million people, if you picked up one person a day, or one person a week for like a zillion years, you could pretty much assure that the people that are coming in are the kind of people you want to be there, and they know how to behave, and they're making good relationships with your staff and other active community members. They're likely to stay, they're likely to behave, they're likely to be just good, solid community members, then no problem. But if you get 1 million people in a day, there's no way you could possibly talk to all those people.
Do you think over time that when a community does get bigger, then it's almost inevitable that the sense of community becomes weaker, that there's no possible way to keep the same tight-knit community that was there amongst 100 members amongst 10,000 members?
I don't want to say that it's impossible, but it does look, as far as the science side of things, does look like that's really difficult to do. Like really, really, really difficult. And it may not be possible. I think it's something that we as community managers and community members need to try to do, though. Because if you give up on it, then you're basically giving up on your community having any kind of success. So it's something you need to work at, even if it's an ideal that you can't fully realize. It's like one of those things, if you're not if you don't start a business to be the best in your industry, then why do it? That kind of thing. You need to have some hope.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. Well, this has been episode 3 of the Community Geek Podcast. Thank you for tuning in with us. Really appreciate it. And I should also mention, I want to give a quick shout out to the guy whose research we were sort of referencing when we talked about that 150 number, Dr. Michael Wu. You can see a video of his in the news feed on Community Geek. I also mentioned this is the first podcast that's been released publicly. The other two, you can now get them publicly, but now this is going to be a podcast that you listeners can share with your friends, other people doing community management. If you think they'd be interested, by all means, they are welcome to come and give a listen. For people that are Community Geek members, hit the forums, man. Click the links on the show notes button and give us these stories. Give us this information, because as you can tell, me and Michael are pretty pumped about these particular topics, as we are about many of the topics we discuss on this show. Thank you for tuning in with us. Tune in next week for a new episode with me and Mike. And I believe the one after that, we'll be able to have Richard back with us and give a recap about his Lithuanian adventure.